Hello and welcome to the Non-Breaking Space show, which you can find online at nonbreakingspace.tv. Non-Breaking Space is a show where we'll seek out the best, brightest, and smartest people on the web and talk to them about how and why they do what they do. Your hosts are Christopher Schmidt and Dave McFarlane, two web designers, authors, and trainers who have a passion for sharing knowledge about the web. This week, the part of Dave McFarlane will actually be played by Trent Walton. I'm Chris from Canada, web designer and podcaster. Christopher and Dave have invited along to help push the record button and keep everyone on track here on Non-Breaking Space. Our guest for this episode is Dan Cederholm. Dan is a designer, author, speaker, husband, and father living in Salem, Massachusetts. He is the founder and principal of SimpleBits, a tiny web design studio, and co-founder and designer of Dribbble, a vibrant community for sharing screenshots of your work. Dan is a recognized expert in the field of standards-based web design and has worked with YouTube, Microsoft, Google, MTV, ESPN, and many others. He has authored four books, including CSS3 for Web Designers, Handcrafted CSS, Bulletproof Web Design, and Web Standard Solutions. In early 2012, he received a Tech Fellow Award for Product Design and Marketing. Dan enjoys sharing his simplistic approach to web design while spreading the word on the standards-based markup and style techniques he's collected by speaking at conferences and events around the globe. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Christopher and Trent in their conversation with Dan.
Thanks much, Chris. Yeah, I'll say welcome to everyone who's listening. Usually Dave would be with me and right now, but he can't make it due to some other commitment, but he wishes he could be here because it's going to be an awesome show. And filling in for Dave McFarlane is Trent Walton. Hey, Trent.
Hey.
Trent, how's it going, man?
It's a great day out here in the Texas Hill Country. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Cool, yeah. Well, just for people who don't know, like, can you give just a little bit of background?
Yeah. I work with two of my friends that I've known since pretty much high school at Paravel, Dave Rupert and Reagan Ray. And I love responsive web design and CSS and typography and all that stuff. That's probably all there is to it.
Yeah. Cool. And you guys just recently did the Microsoft homepage relaunch, right?
Yeah, we helped them build a responsive homepage and design it and launch it. And it was, to say the least, it was a privilege and an opportunity that we're really thankful for. So it was a great time.
Cool. It looked great. So so great to have you here on today's show. And just because it's going to be a really awesome show, I think, because Dan Cederholm is here with us. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for having me here.
We're honored that you're here.
Very, very excited. You guys have a great show. I love you all.
All right. And have you actually listened to the show? Excited.
Yeah. In fact, okay. I listened to... you're trying to get me there.
Gotcha.
I listened to Jessica Hish's last. I think that was the last episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great interview. I love listening to her because she's funny and smart and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Yeah.
Another
one. But so one of the things we always ask our guests is how do you get into web design? Like, what was your path to get into the whole web design industry?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting path, I guess. I was a musician for a long time and still play a little bit, but music was kind of what I wanted to do for, forever, since I was 8, and I think I was 21 and I had a really bad job at a record label called Rounder Records in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I had, I was making minimum wage or whatever, like packing CDs and stuff. But this was, early days of the web. And I finally worked my way up to a job where I was sitting at a desk and there was a computer there and it was a Windows 3.1 machine. And the most important part, though, was it had internet access. And that's something I didn't have at home. So I was too poor at that point. I'd always been interested in computers, though. I'd had computers at home, and Apple Classic II was my first machine. And but I, aside from like AOL access briefly, I didn't have access to the web. Right, this was sort of the early days. I'm not sure what year that was. 95, maybe. So I'm at this job, and I'm like, this is incredible. It sort of opened me to this world of the web and design, and it's sort of, I think it had an epiphany at the time. Like I realized that the web could encapsulate all these different interests I had and sort of pull them together, right? So mm-hmm. music and design. I've always been into design and branding, and but not. I never really applied myself in terms of design. I don't have a education in that. But I sort of loved the web, immediately sort of fell in love with the web, and just by seeing it on this little crappy Windows 3.1 machine. Okay. And I think I was in a band at the time, and we had a friend that was really into web design early, and he was sort of building our website for our band, and I was sort of watching the process of that, and I was, just became fascinated with it as a way of, you know, communicating. Like suddenly we could, anybody in the world could check out our band and listen to a WAV file.
Yeah.
And, you know, hear it. And I just thought that was incredible. And so that's how I got into it. And from there, I went to a bad ISP. I had a really interesting job there doing customer service, but then I sort of learned about, how the web works and how the internet works in general, mm-hmm. how computers worked and, you know, FTP and, command line and all that stuff. Sort of, I was sort of thrown into it and soaked it all up, and that was how I got into it. I mean, and then, you know, job hopping a little bit after that, led me to Fast Company magazine, where I was able to do some real work that actually people would see. And
so, what did you do at Fast Magazine?
Fast Company, I was just a web. Basically like a front-end web developer for them okay. when I first started. And I worked there for 3 years. And this was at the time when web standards was sort of starting, right? The whole movement was starting. And, you know, when I first joined, CSS wasn't used commercially anywhere. It was, you know, it was used for fonts and hover links, hover styles and stuff like that, you know, right. You guys remember. While I was there, you know, CSS was growing and I was experimenting on my blog and I was writing about it. And that, you know, you remember those times, like it was really exciting because everyone was experimenting with stuff and doing cool, awesome things with it. And every day we were, you know, coming up with different solutions and it was fun. And then Wired magazine launched their redesign.
Right. Which is about 10 years ago.
I know. Yeah. It was just the 10th anniversary, right?
Yeah.
Which is incredible. 10 years. My God. And so Doug Bowman was great because he was documenting a lot of this stuff on his blog as well. And we had a lot of parallels, like Fast Company and Wired, you know, had parallels in terms of what they were as websites. Like they had they were both publications, and then they had this online presence. And obviously, Wired was really pioneering a lot of different things. But that was an important watershed moment, right, for CSS, mm-hmm. for everybody. And then for me, it was great because I could go to my boss and say, "Look, you know, look what they did, and look how flexible this is for them. And the time is now for this stuff." And luckily, I had a good boss that was you know, amenable to us taking that same path on. And so from the Wired redesign, we started working on it for Fast Company. And then that launched, you know, 6 months or so after. And, that's how I got into, that's the long story of how I got into web design.
So what made you, go from working at Fast, Fast Company magazine, right? To working on your own, like going freelance, and like, yeah. what was the transition for that?
So I definitely owe it a lot to that job because doing a web standards redesign of Fast Company, and then we also did Ink.com at the time. Mm-hmm. They sort of merged under the same umbrella company while I was there. You know, I was blogging all throughout it. I was blogging on Simple. And because of that, you know, there wasn't – everybody was eating up this stuff that was going on. We were all, you know, sharing each other's solutions, and it was a real fun time. But it also got a lot of followers on the blog. And because of that redesign, I think because of the visibility of it, I was able to – Well, I should say how I got into freelancing was that they moved to New York. The magazine was bought by a company in New York. You could either move to New York or not and be fired. And so I was fired. And I loved it, but I didn't want to move there. So it wasn't by choice, but suddenly I had some followers on the blog, and I had people some contacts that I could say, "Hey, look, I'm going to start freelancing. I guess I don't really know what the hell I'm doing, but start it." And luckily, I got some good clients in the beginning. Mike Davidson was at ESPN, or he had just left ESPN at that point. He sort of hooked me up with them. So I had them as a client, like right off the bat, which is phenomenal, right?
Right.
And scary at the same time. But so I got very lucky with the timing. Like, I got fired, and that sort of pushed, that kicked my ass into freelancing, basically. Yeah. It wasn't intentional, but it happened, and I'm glad it did.
Cool. Yeah, I think, it's been like, what, almost 10 years of freelancing now, or?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Probably is. It's probably 9 at least. Yeah, probably 9 at this point. Yeah, and it's been fun.
Cool. Yeah, it's been great watching development over the years too. So,
Dan, over the years, it's pretty much just been yourself, right? I mean, I think you've had some help come in from time to time, but I kind of think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've basically been kind of at this as a single, like a one man shop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, totally. It was me by myself for a long time, and then I had, Megan Fisher came on board for a little while. She helped me for a little while she was living here in Salem, but then essentially after that, Dribbble sort of became more and more eating more and more of my time, and now that's full time for me. So now I've transitioned again to off of client work and just working on Dribbble.
I think it makes like the ESPN scenario even cooler. Anything I've gotten into that I've been nervous about, I've always known I can just make Dave Rupert figure it out because I got help. But yeah, it's fascinating to sort of hear that. But I bet that plays into the level of resourcefulness and initiative you've got. So it's cool.
Yes. So thanks, man. Like I said, I was terrified, and part of the ESPN thing was me going down to Bristol, Connecticut to their headquarters and like doing a training day with them, and that was just, something I'd never thought I would be doing ever. And just meeting with them was sort of terrifying too. And, at first, fortunately, there's great people there and it worked out really well, but I think it seems like anything I've done career-wise has not necessarily been by choice, but almost by just happenstance. Whether it's getting fired and then, oh god, I got bills, so I got to do something, and suddenly I'm freelancing, and then we're like, hey, and actually, I owe Christopher. This is pretty funny. I owe Christopher Schmidt. He actually offered me the first speaking engagement, which was at South by Southwest.
Oh, wow.
Way back when, right?
That was like a crazy all-star panel.
Doug Boucher, and I think Molly Holschlag was on
following.
And so you were the first one. I remember getting the email from you. I was still at Fast Company. I'm like, you want to be on this panel? I was like blown away. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I don't do these things. I don't fly on airplanes.
I'm like, what do you do on airplanes then? I don't know. But cool. Yeah. That was a crazy panel, because I was just so much crazy talent on that panel. And then there was me, but it was just like, it was crazy just to see
awesome.
all you guys on there. So, one thing I do want to circle back to is, I think you have a kind of a definite like style, if that's, it can be, but I think it's like kind of like love or embrace of the pixel, that's developed over the years. Would that be right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I love that. I love sort of pixel art, and I love the sort of representation of this digital world that we're playing with, you know? Mm-hmm. And some of that comes back to, I got really into BOS before web standards came along. I was really into BOS. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that at all, but it was an operating system like basically before the Mac got popular again. And so, you know, it was very niche, but like they had a very distinctive style in their icons, mm-hmm. and very, very much, you know, isometric pixel stuff. And that was sort of an influence on me too, because I was doing some icons for different things there, and I was playing around with C++, like not even knowing what the hell I'm doing, but just like opening applications in the IDE and like trying to create my own thing. And anyway, that I think some of the pixel stuff comes from that. And then you know, back in the day, you guys remember, like there was a lot of that kind of style was popular because it was the constraint, right? I mean, you can only do so much with what we had to work with, and you know, sites like K10K and
those are huge. Yeah, those are
right. Had that sort of pixel aesthetic too, which I always really appreciated. Right. And I mean, things are changing rapidly now, right? Like the pixel is sort of like this novelty in a way, but still alive, like, right? And even like the retro iPhone games are really cool to see, because they still work and they still look good, and they're nostalgic and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
So like, but I want to get back to like also like you don't have any formal design education, right? You just start plugging away, and like you just
sit
on hammering away and some of that. So like,
I guess I could have taken, you know, like graphic design, but I didn't doing. I went to Emerson College for a year. I dropped out. I was actually learning audio engineering. I went to a small 1-year school for that. Finished that. Thought I was going to, you know, work in a studio or something and record. But then, you know, I had to make a living.
Right.
Just not many people can make a living doing that. You know, you have to have the right personality, I think. And I just wasn't. I wasn't to like staying up until 3 and recording stuff. So anyway, I don't have any formal training in design, but it's always something that it's always been something I've been interested in, and I bet there's other people that fall into this category too, where they've been interested in their whole lives. Like that, you just pay attention to things like typography or like the packaging, like brands. Like it's really into skateboarding. I loved when I was a kid, and I loved like the brand, like skate brands and the t-shirts and the logos that went along with it. And then, music, and it was like music packaging and like seven and album covers and like band posters and stuff. And so like, I was always interested in that stuff. I just never realized that like, hey, I could do some of that stuff. It's a matter of just applying yourself.
Right.
And having the tools to do it, right?
Yeah.
So I think the web was the thing that like brought all that stuff together and made me realize like this is what I like to, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to create stuff too. And it makes it so, I think for someone that's sort of like I don't know, I've sort of have an attention deficit a little bit. And then I just love all sorts of different things. But the, you know, working on the web in front of a screen kind of keeps everything contained in front of you, and it's a little less overwhelming. You know, like thinking about like, well, how do I create you know, a band poster, start doing graphic design? And like to me at the time, it seemed really overwhelming. Like there's so many things I had to learn how to do. But for some reason, everything on the computer in front of me on the screen made everything seem manageable. Yeah. And I think that's why it finally like set off a spark in my head. Like, okay, this is how it works. This is how I can accomplish like what I want to do creatively.
Right. Yeah. I think that's one of the things I love about our industry is like, you don't, and also design, I guess also in particular, is like, you don't need to go to a formal education to learn design or do design stuff. I mean, there's plenty of like, well, famous designers that never went to design school, but you have to be resourceful, and you have to like, you know, have that eye and want to learn and pick it up as you go along. And so it's just, you know, I think it's really great that, you know, and you have this great style for the Pixel and how it's changed and adapted over the years. And also, I think you have a really good sense of composition as well. I think it's how the page is laid out onto the web page too. So it's just really, really always nice to see the work that you do. You know, and that you do also at Dribbble too and some of that. So it's really
And it's funny Dan mentions that because I think that we have very similar backgrounds in that sense. I didn't study design at all. And it was kind of the same deal. You sort of think, well, I can do all this myself. I don't have to go to a printer. This is accessible. I can sit here at my desk and see something through from the very beginning to the very end, and as long as I want to spend on it. And so that was like it makes complete sense to me. And anything that I've gotten into since that may have more print-based roots, like before web fonts, you'd say like typography. And so all of these things for me, the web has been my portal for that as well. I mean, before web fonts, I was just sort of like, Helvetica or Georgia, I don't really care, you know, just pick one of those. It's interesting. Like for me, the exact same thing. And we were visiting Texas State University yesterday, and there's these students, and they've got like screen printing classes. They've got, I mean, they just got all sorts of resources, and it's wonderful to see them have it. But I also do think that the initiative required and the resourcefulness required for us, it's been good. So, you know, I definitely don't regret that either. Though I kind of, man, we were, the three of us, Paravel guys, were joking about that last night. It'd be nice to sort of take a few classes and see if there's anything we missed along the way.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. That's funny. You hit the nail on the head with the, you know, seeing a screen printing class, for instance, and you know, before the web, like there's people that just know that they want to do that, right? They come to school and they're like, yeah, I make posters, or I make, you know, I design fonts, or, and I never had that because I didn't really know. I was just too scattered, and that's good to hear that the web, you know, sort of does that for people, that it brings these interests into one, you know, sort of manageable place. And that's pretty cool. Trent, how did you get into I'm curious, how did you get into web design?
I love that you asked me that. But yeah, I'm actually on Wayback Machine looking at old SimpleBit sites, and I'm trying to find the exact date. I remember I had a talk with Dave Rupert. Dave and I have been friends for maybe like coming up on somewhere between 15 and 20 years. And Dave is I think kind of from, just like you, from the beginning, like HTML and CSS. Yeah. Well, I was sort of dumb. We had this conversation in like 2000 where like, man, you can just control everything with Flash. I'm gonna start building Flash websites. And so I kind of dropped off the grid for a couple of years, and just like everything else, Dave is always right. I've learned not to argue with the guy, but I remember coming back and saying, oh, damn it, he was right. This is better. And so I was working at a company in Houston, and I was like, okay, like who knows what they're doing? And I don't know. You might need to send me an invoice, but I'm pretty sure I'm looking at a version from like 2001, and I'm pretty sure I learned about like unordered lists. Just, and every single thing else from you. I'm not making it up. Like it's totally true. Like I even remember Wayback Machine is awesome. We'll put some of these links maybe with the podcast, but I'm like in 2008 where it was like the green logo with the blue banner. I remember all these like it was just yesterday, but I think that was sort of it. Like I got hired to work at this company, and I was sort of doing marketing stuff. I didn't know how to do anything at all. I was out of college and everything, but I didn't study that. So, I mean, just like probably everybody else out there that isn't like trained to be a web designer and trained in code, man, I was scouring the web for the best examples and basically just trying to learn everything I possibly could from those. And I don't think anything has changed over the past like 5 to 10 years. So, but that's pretty much it.
You're right. It's all about, that's what's cool about the web, right? It's all about putting the time in and learning from each other. And you can do that. The great thing is you can learn everything on the web about making the web. And that's really unique.
Yeah. One thing we were telling these students last night, and it didn't really dawn on me until we got into talking about it, but all these like oh, I have an idea and I'm going to stay up till 4 o'clock just because I'm so excited about it. Mm-hmm. Or just these like dead ends, like, oh, my database is totally trash. I don't know how to fix it. I'm hacked. I don't even know how hosting works. What's FTP? All of these just horrible situations or really confusing situations. Going through all of that over the years, it just continues to inform all of the decisions we make. I mean, they may seem trivial and really old, but I still feel like that's part of my DNA today. All the weird struggles and like cPanel login stuff from back in the day plays a part.
Yes, I think all that time learning in that way just will always stick with you, I think. That's a good thing, though.
Yeah. Well, like, there's one piece of advice that you gave me, like, you know, I think it was an email exchange, like, briefly, and it was just like, just to blog, and just to keep on blogging, and everything that, and I reminded that because I think about your old website and everything, because there's something that used to do was the Simple Bits CSS quiz.
Yeah, right.
That used to do, and do you think that helped and like give you attention? And help you out as a freelancer?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. The definitely. And I think at the time I was saying blog, it's only because I really owe everything to the blog, where I'm at career-wise. And that's just sort of given me everything. And I learned so much from other people's blogs too, right? Mm-hmm. And we still do that today. It's just a little different. It might not be on someone's personal, only on someone's personal blog, but... Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the simple quiz, that was sort of this idea. I had like breaking things down, and there was just so many ways to accomplish the same thing in web design. Right? And it's still true today, right? There's no one way to do everything. And I think at the time, people were getting hung up on like, what's the best semantic way to do this? And
right.
Maybe there isn't a best answer, but at least we can come to a consensus on like what makes sense in a certain situation. So that was the goal, and people got really into it, and the comments were really interesting and had a really good discussion about just real basic stuff, right? Basic HTML structure. And that actually led to writing my first book, The Web Standard Solutions. That was kind of the blueprint for that. First, you know, half of the book is kind of like, let's take the simple quiz questions and sort of turn them into book form and use like those multiple choice answers or those different ways of accomplishing the same thing as a guideline for learning. And you know, again, it's like, I had no idea what I was doing in terms of writing a book, but it was one of those things that, the idea came and I got a publisher, Friends of Ed, on board and excited about it. And they were willing to take a risk on someone who's never written something before. And again, it's like one of those things that you get pushed into and not necessarily sort of a scary thing to get pushed into. And you just do it and
right.
Snowballs and it leads you to the next thing.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's kind of funny, like you know, a publisher has to take a risk on you because they've never written before, but you have this like, blog that you've been pounding away, you know, for maybe a year or 2 years at that point, at least. So,
it's, again, I owe it to the blog because it had a lot. I did put a lot of time into it and a lot of articles and things and thinking and that definitely built the following that so people knew about the book when you know the marketing was sort of built in because I could announce it on the blog. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I should start blogging again these days.
Well, I feel bad because like you told me that advice and I've never really stuck to blogging. So I was just like feel bad about not doing that. But I feel like my blog is too often neglected. But yeah.
He feels that way, though, right? Even yeah. No matter how.
But yeah. Well, one thing I do want to mention is that in conjunction with blogging and doing the things that you've done, and I think Trent can talk about this too, with his side projects too. But you also worked on a site called Foamy a little bit, you know, and kind of think about like what you know, tell people what Foamy was And the reason why I bring that up, because I feel like that was like kind of like, was that maybe your first like kind of web app, you know, in type of?
Yeah, no, it's funny. It was really fun to build. It was essentially Foamy was a, on Twitter, it's a Twitter thing back in the early days of Twitter. And a lot of times I'd be like, yeah, I owe you a beer for that. You know, you fixed this thing on my server or whatever. And I owe you a beer. And I got to thinking like, that'd be cool if you could on Twitter, you could say like, I owe you a beer. And then like something kept track of it so like you wouldn't forget. And someone would get notified like, oh, okay. And I wanted to build this thing, and it's a side project, and it was like a way to learn like a PHP framework at the time. That's what I was using because I couldn't get that complicated and use something better. But and then Twitter at the time, you know, their API was just brand new, and they were really getting excited about people building stuff on it, and which maybe it's changed these days, but they promoted it a little bit on Twitter.com, and so it didn't explode or anything, but it was always this fun thing that I did on the side, and you know, that's where great things happen, right? When you build little side project things, and I know a lot of people would attest to that.
Right, well, like that's why I mentioned Trent earlier, because like I think Parabell also does like many faces of as well.
Yeah, we do a lot of that stuff. And I mean, it's kind of dual purpose for us. Hell, like Parabell was a side project at the beginning before we went full time. But either, you know, we were, there are some things that if they would have taken off, that would have been great. But other, you know, aside from that, though, it was nice because there was a point where we were doing tons and tons of sites a year. I mean, probably 3 to maybe 10 times more than we do right now, just projects in and out the door, rushing, they're relatively low cost, and there was really no room for exciting innovation. And so we sort of realized, hey, we need to, like, what we're putting out, we're being hired to do, what people see from us is what we're going to be doing next, because this is what people think that we like to do or we choose to do. So we started to use these side projects, and like the many faces of, it was just sort of a way to be like, look, we want to play with all the new like CSS, any kind of new stuff, that new technology we can get into. We want to experiment with that, and we want people to hire us to do it. And I mean, that sort of, you know, snowballed into kind of every fun opportunity we've had throughout the year. So those side projects, I mean, if you're not doing them, you know, it's a really good way. If you don't have what you really want to be doing in your portfolio, it's a good way to convey that to people. People aren't going to look at you and say, oh, he'd be really good to do this fun job that he's never done before, he or she's never done before. I'm going to hire him to do it. It's like this potential energy. You have to show that. So, I mean, doing all of those led to like fun stuff, like Lost Worlds Fairs, or I mean, even really maybe Microsoft. So, it's got to be the hobby too, I think, which is kind of nuts, but it's paid off.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant advice. I mean, create your own clients, really, right?
Yeah.
Create work that you want to be doing. I think I think Jessica Hish, I don't know if it was on your show or I can't remember, or another one where she basically was saying something similar, and that she was doing, you know, had an agency job and then wanted to do more lettering and started doing the daily drop cap thing, and that mm-hmm. suddenly she's getting all these request to do lettering, which is exactly what you wanted to do. Right. So it's totally true. Like if you know, start building stuff and see what sticks, and if it's cool, people are gonna be like, oh, well, they're the people that made that thing, and we want to do something similar. And yeah, I love that, and I love all the Parabell stuff that you guys have been doing. The many faces of, and
yeah, we have fun.
All the lettering stuff that you guys have been, the typography stuff you guys have been doing, it's been really valuable.
So, I don't want to mention this briefly. So, like, so you did Foamy, which I totally love, because, and I loved it for I think I still have the T-shirt, so floating around here. And I also love that you did beer, but you also did coffee for Foamy.
Yeah.
And then
year because people were like, "Hey, I don't drink beer." And,
yeah, I thought that was awesome that you did that. But so is Foamy just? I think I checked it out earlier. It was just it's still somewhat up and still somewhat not.
Yeah. So what happened is that the Twitter API changed. It went to OAuth, and I never around to learning that and fixing it. So
yeah.
It's actually trying to pull like the same stuff. Probably I should probably turn it off. it's a really simple really simple script that was hitting the API. But since they changed it, it just doesn't work anymore. And
right.
You have to use authentication to do it. And so I think like a couple lines of code would probably fix it up. And I need to do that because. Okay. I mean, I never thought anybody was looking at it, but apparently you are, so that's good.
Dude, every day I'm like here at 9 o'clock in the morning, every day, just like, is Foamy up?
For years now, you've been like,
like, if I wear this t-shirt out, no one knows what's going on. I have to wait until the site's up and then I can go out.
I should fix it. There's no reason I should.
But yeah, so I just want to mention briefly, like, so. You know, Foamy was like, you know, pretty much your first foray into like a web app. And then like, I guess in a way, right? And so then you had Quart, which is a site for wine cataloging.
Yes. Yes. Actually, here, Quart might have been before Foamy.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was first. And Dan Benjamin and I created that. And, you know, it was interesting because it was a huge learning experience. Like it I love wine, but I don't actually live wine. I think part of the reason we sold it was because, you know, I think for a while I was like, well, to do this right and to grow this thing, we'd have to be into wine. Suddenly we'd be in the wine business and not necessarily the web business. And because of the advertising and the contacts you'd have to have and
right.
The knowledge of what serious wine drinkers need and stuff like that. And so that was a good learning experience, right? Like I think you got to love what you do immensely. If you're for startups, essentially, this is essential. Like you got to love it because if you're successful, if you're lucky enough to make it work, then you're going to be stuck with this thing and you've got to love it. Otherwise it's going to turn into a job that you don't dig. And, so you just be careful when you're choosing. I think I tell this to people, you know, that are starting out with things like choose wisely and make sure you really, really love what you do.
Right.
Because you're going to be living it. If you're successful and that's the goal, right, then you're going to be living whatever that is. So.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So. But yeah, but it was successful exit strategy. You sold it to someone who lived wine, right? And so, and loved it, so.
Yeah, and they he didn't really do much with it, which is kind of a shame. That's not a good story, really.
I'm sorry about that. Brought it up then. Sorry.
Bring it up. I mean, it was unfortunate that it died off, but that happens.
Okay. So but I want to mention Quart and as a way of going to talk about Dribbble. So, like, at what point did you how far apart was Dribbble from Quart, or was it any overlap, or was it like where did the idea for Dribbble come from in relation to?
There's no overlap there. That was much a few years after, I think. I was going to conferences and stuff and always asking like colleagues and friends, like, what are you working on? You know, I was interested in what people were up to. Cause a lot of times you don't really know. I mean, you look at their portfolio and you can see, and it's a little easier now with Twitter and Facebook and everything. But, still, like, in terms of work, the work that we do, it wasn't really a good... I just love to peek over the shoulder of all these people and see what they're doing. So that was the inspiration for it. And partially Twitter in terms of the constraint and Cameron Mall's screen grab confab, I think it was called, that you know, people were sharing what's on their screen, and it had a constraint and because of the column size of his blog, you know. So that like, you know, Twitter is 140 characters and like easily digestible things. Plus this, what are you working on? Thing kind of, they all came together and that was the original inspiration for it.
And then, and so Dribbble is a collection of snapshots of what people are working on right now. And
yep.
Yeah, just talk about how like, so it's, so it grew from that, but then over the year, so when it started out as a side project that you would spend a little time on, and but you had a partner in crime, right, for the back end, right?
Yes, yeah, from the start. Rich Thornett is the co-founder and the real brains behind the programming of the whole thing. So that sort of happened, you know, serendipitously, because we were he's from Salem as well, here in Massachusetts, and he had a place to work remotely while he was at his job. And so I had some space in my office and he'd be in there. And then at that time is when the idea for Dribbble, I was tossing around the office and he was like, well, let's set it up, you know, so let's get a Rails project going and start building it. And it really did start as a side project, and we didn't know what would happen. Mm-hmm. We certainly didn't know that it would turn into something real where it's our full-time job and mm-hmm. everything. But I think we've grown really slowly, and that's been helpful, extremely helpful. And getting that first wave of people on Dribbble as a private beta was really crucial in terms of deciding how people would use it. Mm-hmm. First, you know, we had about 50 people that I sent T-shirts to, and like a handwritten card that said, like, here, go to here, and this is an invitation for you. And people immediately, you know, all of a sudden, we weren't quite sure how people would use it. We actually thought it might be a little bit more boring than it is today, like where you could just, you're like writing an email, you know, and you snap part of it and be like, yeah, I'm writing an email right now. Or, you know, in hindsight, thank God, because that would be pretty, pretty stupid.
Yeah, I'd dribble so much if that was the thing. Five times a day.
I know, me too. Right, that's basically what business turns into, right? Yeah. We weren't quite sure how people were going to use it, and then that, like I said, that first sort of 50 people that we invited, sort of paved the way for how it was going to be used. And right off the bat, it was like this sort of beautiful visual stuff going on. And that's carried through to today, really. I mean, people use it for different ways, and we love that, actually. Just like people use Twitter in different ways, right? And all sort of, you follow people that are interesting, and that's cool. And there's like sort of different micro communities going on at the same time. But the overall theme of sort of sharing what you're doing and trying to make it interesting to get people interested in it is been sort of the goal throughout.
Yeah, it's been a very slow development process, but at the same time, like, to get to where it is now, it's been just very nice, very slow approach.
It's been a slow, and that was been intentional, because we've been bootstrapping it, and we haven't taken funding on, and we intentionally that's dictated how slow we have to go. But I think I'm glad we did it this way, and it's been a lot more fun. We've been accountable to no one but ourselves and the community. Mm-hmm. And that's paid off, I think. And at this point, you know, we're sort of ramping up a little bit. We're looking for a developer. Little plug for our job.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to go from freelancing to client, you know, to working on the same project, like Dribbble, like your job now, and that you're not beholden to a client, but you're beholden to kind of community, right?
Yeah. Yes. Great. I'll have to tell you. Not that I didn't love client work, and I did, and I loved working on different things, and it was always a new, exciting challenge, and blah blah blah. But I think, you know, there's nothing like owning your own product and seeing it through and being able to focus on that over a long period of time is really great. Because when I was doing client work, you know, a lot of times I would, this is funny, like looking back at my portfolio maybe last year or something, I think I was moving it somehow, maybe in a different design of the blog or whatever. And I would be following the links to stuff I did, and like barely any of it is still alive. It's not there anymore. Yeah. It just, that's the nature of the web, right? It's this, some of it's ephemeral. Like we're spending all this energy and time into creating this what we think is this best thing possible at the moment. And really it's temporary. It's going to get replaced most of the time, right? And that's kind of disappointing in a way. And I think, you know, so owning your own product and sort of or working on something long term has been really fun, and it's been really new, different challenges in terms of managing a community. And I'm doing less, you know, I'm doing less CSS debugging than I am. Kind of nice as well. But at the same time, there's other, so many different hats to wear when you're sort of running a company as opposed to just freelance design. And I'm doing a lot of, like Trent was saying earlier, it's like email. It's probably the most thing I'm doing a day.
Yeah, the people saying that email is dead, but I've emailed more and more each year. It's crazy. It's just how much email I'd send out.
It done, really. I mean, yeah. It just, you can't avoid it. But there's so much email, and there's so there's a lot of challenges with working full time on a side project that turns into something. But it overall, I find that it's really rewarding, and I'm always excited to get up and work on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a huge fan. Like when you started, you know, taking it to the next level with like sponsorship and everything, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. Totally great. But there's always been a question in my mind. It was like, you know, when you start out with Dribbble, like you said, like, I want to know what people are talking about right now, or like what they're doing on right now. My question was always like, why didn't Dan just start a Flickr group and just ask people to go through Flickr?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could have been, right? Yeah. It could have been, but I think that would have been, it wouldn't have been as tight-knit of a community, I think. No. Yeah, because you're right. I mean, the technology, technically, it's not doing anything that unique, right? I mean, it's sort of sharing pictures. Right? Right. Like, there's tons of ways to do that. And but I think that's the thing. I think Dribbble is—it's not really that. It's the people that are. I had this sound corny, but it is the people, the community that make it what it is, and
right.
So they're sharing. And I've the most amazing thing about it, I think, to me is that I've met and discovered people, so many people that I wouldn't have otherwise. Oh. And like their work and what they're doing and being interested in that. And so,
right.
And I think there's something about like the idea of us having a space. I mean, it's sort of funny, but like, I don't like RSS. I like to go to your blog and read your stuff. It sort of feels like I'm visiting in a way. And so, I mean, from the beginning for me, I totally agree with that, you know, the main benefit, it's fun to share what you're doing, but the main benefit is this community thing. And it's cool that, you know, I've made friends who live all across the world, and without having to like bother them and say, look what I'm doing right now, I can just sort of like put it out there and sort of like a, hey, this is what's going on in my life. And it has provided a way for us to sort of maintain relationships. And I think that's, I mean, even just seeing the logo and having the UI that we're used to and sort of having like our own URL. It's from day one, it's always felt like It sounds cheesy too. Like a special place for me to go and kind of just see what's up. I mean, it's this is maybe we can maybe talk like, what do likes mean? And for me, sometimes I'll be like, this is great. This is a great shot. You're really good. Congrats. You know, like awesome. You rule. You win the internet. But sometimes it's almost just like, I like what you're doing and it's cool. And it's like, hey, like, it's like almost a head nod. Like,
yes.
You know, yeah. I met you a year ago and you told me about this and you're like chugging away. And here's like a little, like, even maybe if it's code or, you know, people screenshot code or whatever, or like a problem they're having. And so it's sort of a way to just be present in like comrade designer developers mm-hmm. in their lives, in their work. And for me, like Dribbble, it's definitely benefited Paravel and our careers, but it's also been like the Dribbble meetups and stuff that's come about. I think that the power and the passion and the reason why when pro memberships came out and everybody was just like signing up and throwing money, it's this thing that this is something that we all want to be good stewards of and we all value. And it's far beyond this wonderful utility of screenshots. It's everything else that just sort of naturally formed by you guys kind of slowly growing and listening to community feedback. So I think that, yeah, the payoff is far beyond like getting likes or finding people. Those are great. But it's sort of these more long drawn out kind of feelings or like relationships that grow from all that action on the day to day. But it's been great to be a part, and thanks for building it.
Hey, thanks for being on there. I mean, you guys have done such phenomenal stuff on Dribbble. It's been awesome to see you guys sharing what you're doing.
Yeah, I had to find a way out of that spiel. I could have gone on for 30 minutes about how much I love Dribbble. I was like, how do I end this? How do I stop talking? But yeah, it's been good to share, and hell, it's been great for us. So
I'm going to owe you more money than we agreed on, Trent. Glad you brought up the likes thing, because I think that's – I actually had a blog post half written that I didn't publish about the meaning of like, and certainly just Dribbble, but like just anything in general, any social network in general, like that like can mean so many different things. And I think once you grasp that, it's actually this really convenient, powerful, efficient way of communicating with other people, right? Like like it can mean different things, like you just said. Like it could mean this is incredible visually, and this is like artwork I'd hang on my wall. Or it could also mean like, you know, encouragement, like, hey, keep going with that, I like it. Or you just, you know, you appreciate the person and you appreciate that they're actually sharing something and they're putting their self out there. And same goes for, you know, Twitter or something. Like, instead of having to write a reply, I might like the tweet just to say, like, just to acknowledge that I got it and then I'm here. And I love that about that. It's just such a simple mechanism, but it can mean so many different things. I think the flip side is that some people don't see that, and they see it as like as one thing, and whatever that is. Then it makes them angry when they see things liked because of other reasons, and they don't understand what liked for different reasons. And it can mean a lot of different things. And but I like that. Maybe it shouldn't be like, it should be a different, there should be like a name, a global name for all, for the web. Like, I don't know.
The yo button. Hey, yo, yo.
Oh man,
that's a bad idea. That's terrible. What the hell would the icon look like? I don't even. Anyway.
This is what tradition plan. But yeah, so like I think I don't know if it is like kind of too much of a simplification for it. But like we had Lou Rosenfield on, and we asked him like what is UX? You know, and he had a really kind of a cute, I guess, or curt answer was UX is Apple. We think of Apple products minus Sony equals UX. You know, that's what user experience is. And so I think like maybe like Dribbble is, what you think of Dribbble is minus Flickr equals the community. And that's what like Dribbble really, like that's at the heart of Dribbble. Would you agree with that, or would that be?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, Flickr, Flickr used to be, well, I hate to say it like that, but personally, Flickr used to be a wonderful community and everyone was sharing. Sort of, that was the way I kept up on what people were doing.
You know? Right, yeah.
Or, like before the check-in or
Instagram.
Or before Instagram, right. Yeah. And it's still a wonderful utility. And I, but the, yeah, I think the simple act of like just uploading a photo of something or a picture is shared amongst Flickr and Dribbble and Instagram and all, any site that sort of you're sharing something visual. Yeah, but again, I would agree with the community part of it. And like Trent was saying, the stuff that's sort of come out around this is probably the real value of the site and not necessarily the act of uploading something, right? It's the connecting other people and maybe getting work from it or in the meetups and that kind of thing. So it's been fun to see. It's been a learning experience. Like it's just not anybody can build something, but the real challenge is maintaining people. Yeah. And again, I'm going to get corny here, but it's true. It's about managing people and with them. And we see it all on the back of this because we see the good, bad, and the ugly in terms of like how they interact with each other. And it's challenging. But for the most part, we've been fortunate that the Dribbble community itself has been phenomenal overall. I mean, we get a lot of positivity there. So
cool. Yeah, well, I think it's good good point to transition to like towards the end. But there's one question we always ask our guests is what are you most passionate about right now? Like what's getting you up in the morning in regards to work and like, you know, like when it comes to, I guess, you know, Dribbble, like what are you looking forward? You know, it may not be about Dribbble, but maybe something in the industry that you want to bring into Dribbble or something like that, or
yeah, that's a good question. Jeez.
That's just part of the gotcha journalism that we do here.
Yeah, I feel
it is. You got me. So well, work if it, I would say I am passionate about growth, you know, just sort of growing this thing because we're kind of in a weird place where we need to expand the team probably, and at the same time, in order for us to grow the community, we need that extra person. So it's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. So I think that's not really what I'm passionate about. Let's see. This is a tough one, Christopher. Jeez.
Well, like, well, you're interested in seeing, like, you maintaining, right, and maintaining with, you know, positivity, like just growing it and nurturing, I guess, if that's, you know, and seeing how you can do that because it's kind of a unique challenge because, like, as a freelancer, you'd build something and then you hand it over and as you mentioned, you would go back to your portfolio recently and all that stuff is just wiped away in the sands of time, right? It's hopefully there's an archive, you know, machine for that, so it's a unique challenge for you, right? So it's something that's
a challenge. There's all new stuff going on here in terms of like, you know, support and we have someone helping us with that. Thank goodness. And now, but for a while, just being rich and just like how you deal with that? How do you deal with email sending? How do you deal with newsletters? How do you deal? Like, there's just something different every day. And I think that's up every morning is because there's always something new to think about. Like, all right, we're gonna do like t-shirt today, and like, how do we do that, or what design do we want to do, and we're gonna do a newsletter tomorrow, and then we're gonna do something on the blog. We're gonna feature somebody that we really like on the blog, and that's aside from just the day to day like Dribbble features and maintenance and all that stuff. So you put all that stuff together, and it's like it's never boring, right?
Right.
And like you were saying, it's not something that you finish and then hand over. It's never done, right? I mean, a website is never done, really. And so that constant evolution is kind of, I think what I like about it the most. And that's parallels the web in general, right? Like, that's what I always liked about the web is that it just never gets old. It's like it's always constantly changing. And the technologies that we use are changing, even though, so you're never going to be finished learning, and you're never going to be finished reading, and you're never going to be finished with, it's just an endless, endless thing. Actually, it's just kind of terrifying in a way. But,
yeah.
It's just, it's going to be going on and on and on. Like the animated GIFs are going to keep, they're going to keep animating, even though you're not looking at them.
Yeah, right now, this minute.
Right.
It's like, we're not looking at them, but they're right there. You know they're there.
That's key, isn't it? Like, they're all these animated GIFs, like, moving around right now that we're not looking at, but they're still moving. They're still looping.
Right.
I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Right. Well, how can people find you on the internet and on the Twitters and all that?
So I'm SimpleBits on Twitter, and I am SimpleBits on Dribbble, and SimpleBits on Instagram, and SimpleBits on SimpleBits.com is my sort of blog, which I haven't updated in a long time, but there's some stuff there.
I'm sensing a pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Except Flickr. On Flickr, I am SimpleBits Dan.
Oh, okay.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
What's up?
Cool. Awesome. And yeah. Our guest co-host, Trent, how can people find you on the internet?
Same thing. Trent Walton, everything. Yeah, SimpleBits, everything. Just follow Dan. Trent Walton, everything. Trent, you know, at Trent Walton on Twitter, Dribbble, Instagram, TrentWalton.com. Simple.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, cool.
Thank you guys. Yeah, it was awesome. It's good really chatting with you.
Cool. And I also want to say thanks to Chris from Canada for pushing the buttons behind the scenes. You can follow him on Twitter at iChris on your iDevice of choice. And thanks to you, listeners. It would be great if you could rate us up on iTunes. It does help us get the word out about the show, in addition to mentioning it on the Twitters and the Facebooks. And again, thanks to Trent Walton and Dan Tierholm for joining us on Non-Breaking Space. Check out our show notes at nonbreakingspace.tv, where all the links and sites that were discussed will be posted. All right. Talk to you guys next time.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Man, so like, how did Microsoft? Did Microsoft just call you up, or just like?
Oh, we did a couple of things for Nishant.
Yeah.
Sorry, and he did it all. We owe him like everything. Oh, no. So we did like Lost Worlds Fairs and all this mix online. So he kind of.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We were at lunch at South by. I was like, "Do you want to do the Microsoft homepage?" That's pretty much the story right there. I said yes. They called me, and he said, "Hey, it's Dan.
Hey, guys, listen. I am sorry for the delay.
No problem.
It's kind of one of. It's funny. I forgot I didn't install Skype yet on this machine. It's like, okay, let's go. And I'm like, where's Skype? And I had to download and install it. Sorry about that.
No problem. Cool, man. Well, glad you're here.
And I am glad I'm here, too. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Cool. And Trent is here, as you go. And then
Trent Walton, how are you doing, man?
Good. I don't want to make you feel bad, but I am sitting here in a tuxedo. and I've been up since 3:30 this morning because I was so nervous.
Me too, man. Me too.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Right? I mean, I don't have a tuxedo on, but okay. I actually don't have anything on. But
I'm still nervous.
And that's
I'm still very
too.
Nervous. It's kind of what I do when I get nervous. I just take all my clothes off. Yeah. It helps immensely.
So I as a vision of you guys, just one with a tuxedo, one naked, just staring at the MacBook. Yeah. For the last 9 hours.
Yeah. Your vision is probably accurate. Let's put it that way. I'm telling you.
All right.
So glad we didn't do a video call.
I know. Me too, man.
Oh, man.
It's been awkward.
So I'm a quick rundown of what we're going to do today. I'm not sure if you heard of our podcast episode before or not, but so Chris Enns is our producer. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dan. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Big fan.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Yeah. So,
I'm a fan of your show.
Okay, cool. Thanks. So, yeah, and we wouldn't have a show without Chris. He actually makes it all happen for us. So, I'm really happy.
I probably have
here.
A better show without Chris. Anyway, we'll get it.
So he actually does, like, he produces the whole thing, puts it together, duct tapes it up, and sends it out there. And he also does our intros for that. So he's got an intro, and then Trent is our guest host. So we'll do a quick chat, see how things are going with him, and then we'll pull you in and then talk until we're done.
Fantastic. It sounds awesome. I'm honored to be here. You guys have done some good stuff here.
Oh.
A lot of cool. I almost swore and for no reason, really.
It's just because you're so nervous. That's. Yeah.
I am very nervous. It's not clear.
We had Jessica Hish on a couple episodes ago, and she dropped a bunch of S-bombs that we had to edit out. So don't worry if something slips out. Okay. We'll catch it.
All right.
Can you do beeps? Because that probably sound really funny. I like the beeps.
Beeps would be funny.
I think for this one, we should get like a basketball bounce or something.
You should just beep or basketball whistle. Bounce random words just to make it sound really like terrible people.
We could choose one word to always replace
it. I was recording already.
Pushing pixels, bleep out pushing, and who knows?
Yeah. Just put in tuxedo.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I got Trent saying, are you saying tuxedo? Or whoever said tuxedo.
I think we all said tuxedo.
We're all at fault for that one.
Safety word.
Safe word.
Wait, Trent, which podcast are you here for?
I don't know.
Sure. Okay.
Now you may wonder why they don't let me on Shop Talk very much.
All right, so
sorry, Christopher, you're trying to be professional. I'm
no, I'm going to stop right now. I'm going to take off my clothes and just relax.
All right, join in the fun.
Yeah.
But apparently it doesn't work. I get really nervous. But
this is already the best podcast I've ever been on. By the way,
we're actually talking about doing this live next year, and so I think this is a good reason for not to do that live.
There should be some ground rules. Kind of contract or something.
All right, so Chris, I would just say just do an audio check, make sure they were all doing great.